Hey everyone, and welcome to the Tom's Hardware Show. I'm your host, Sharon Harding, and today we're checking out Riskable's homemade magnetic levitation keyboard switches and demoing Rocket's new gaming microphone. So we are live, everybody, as always, and we are taking questions from the audience. So if you have anything you'd like to ask, just drop your question into the chat if you're watching this live, and we'll try to answer it right on air. So we have a special guest in the house today. It's been a while since he's been on the show. Tom's Hardware Editor-in-Chief, Avram Pilch. How are you, Avram?
Good. I'm really excited to learn more about Riskable's keyboard, though, because that looks awesome.
Absolutely. So yeah, believe it or not, we have an even more special guest, Riskable, Dan McDougall, but you might know him from his YouTube channel as Riskable. He's a tech enthusiast of many kinds, has some great tech hacks on that channel. Welcome to the show, Riskable. How are you?
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Great. So Riskable, Avram and I, as I told you, we both love mechanical keyboards. Avram's getting deeper and deeper into 3D printing every day. So we're really glad to have you on the show. So speaking of switches, we all know there's so many out there, but you actually made your own. You call them the Void switches. Can you give us a look at these homemade switches and explain how they work?
Sure. This is the switch right here. And it's basically, that's much better. Three parts. I'll pull the levitator off, which is just a little magnet holder that goes on the stem and under the keycap. And if I take one of these out, you can see it kind of under the keycap right there. It. And what that does is it repels the magnet, which is in the body. Let me take the stem out here. So there's two parts here. One is the body and one is called the sheath. I don't know what to call it, so I called it the sheath. And you can see there's a magnet in there. That's the body magnet, and the levitator opposes it. It wants to push itself away at all times, right? And then there's a magnet in the stem, which is attracted to the body magnet. You see that? Ooh, I should probably put this down. And if I just had the magnet in the body, it has a hard time lifting itself up if there's a very heavy keycap, which is why I add the levitator. But one interesting aspect of the levitator is that it actually smooths out the force curve quite a lot and makes the switch overall feel much nicer. And this switch I'm holding right here has about a 60 grams of force feel, but it is a parametric design, so you can make the travel as long as you want. These are 15 millimeters. And you can also make the strength however you want. The strength of the magnet is actually controlled via the amount of material on the stem. I'll take one out so you can see. So there's a material right above the stem here. And right now this is basically, I think it's 0.3 millimeters of material. And that's a parameter in the OpenSCAD script that I wrote. So I could change that to like 0.5 or, you know, a 1 millimeter distance. And that would reduce the amount of force required to press the switch down, because the further the magnets are away from each other at rest, the less force is required to get it moving. I know the way you can change it, use stronger or bigger or smaller magnets. Those can be changed as well. These are the cheapest magnets money can buy, about a penny each. So if someone was wondering how much it costs to make one of these switches, 3 cents.
Wow.
3 cents worth of magnets and about a penny's worth of filament.
Wow.
So that's the switch.
So you said that they are attracted to each other and not repelling each other. How do you prevent it from sticking together if they're attracted?
Well, they are attracted. Like, the way this one works is, if I don't have the levitator on here, so you press it down and it pulls itself back up. But, you know, when you're all the way down, if I had a weaker switch, it would be more prevalent. But you can press it down all the way and it won't come back up sometimes. Because when it's the inverse square law, basically the magnets follow. So the further away it is, the less force it has to pull itself back, right? So that's what the levitator does. It just, when you press down on the switch, the levitator gets closer to the magnet in the body, and therefore the opposing force increases, right? And that just, it sort of just lets it lift itself up. It just helps with that. I don't know how else to describe it. It's three magnets. If I put this on here. Oh, it's not the same levitator. Got to get the polarity right. There we go. So at rest, the levitator doesn't really do much. but when you get it closer to the body magnet, it wants to push itself away at the same time as this one wants to pull itself up. And the detection mechanism I'm using, I've got my little Aku boards, analog keyboard units. So there's an LED that's that white thing, but right next to it is a little analog Hall effect sensor. So if you just, you can see I put the switch over it. And as long as it's over it within like, probably like, I want to say 5 millimeters, that's probably good enough to get the full travel of the switch. The detection distance of these is about 12 millimeters max, where it's accurate. I mean, you can go further than that, but it's not as accurate. So as long as it's somewhere above here, it can detect the motion of the magnet. And the important part is that none of the other magnets interfere with it because they're far enough away, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So what type of feel does it have? Would you say it's a linear feel, a clicky feel, or a tactile feel?
That's actually an excellent question. So this one, I grabbed it just on a whim, this one's much more linear. Now, it's got two M52 magnets in them, and you can see there's like a ton of material above this because M52 magnets are super duper strong, right? And it printed on the side here, 1.5 millimeters. That's the amount of material above the magnet on the stem. So this one is, I want to say it's like 55, if memory serves, grams of force. But the tactility is very weak. It's basically just a linear switch the way it moves. But if I take one of these other ones, which is, this one's a 0.4 millimeter magnet gap, this one's extremely tactile. It's very satisfying to tap it, to click it.
Mm.
So the tactility is configurable based on the parameters that you choose before you print the switch. Another example is these silly things. They're very linear because the magnet gap is huge, and I'm using N52s throughout. But right. It is strong enough to lift it all the way back up, as you can see.
So I don't know if you're familiar with it, but there used to be, I don't know if Dell still makes it, but Dell used to take a version of, I think it was the XPS 15 2-in-1, where they used a maglev keyboard, where the keys were actually using magnet switches.
And I know exactly what you're talking about. That would be the equivalent of this,
yeah.
Without the basically without that magnet in the stem. It would be just the levitator. If I take this apart again. If I take the stem out, it'd be the way those switches worked is just a repulsive force, which is very weak. And there were scissor switches, if memory serves, like the very little tiny switches with a very, very short travel distance, which makes sense because magnetic levitation is a very weak force, whereas magnetic attraction is a much stronger force, right? So the strength of the switch is mostly controlled via the amount of material on top of the stem there. In fact, changing the levitator from an N52 to a N35 magnet doesn't really change the feel that much. All it does is it makes it, the N52 gives it a little softer feel when you bottom out. And I kind of like that. That's why I got regular cheapo N35s in here, and then I've got an N52 in the levitator. It just gives it a nice, I don't know, more satisfying feel. Best way to put it. And to describe, what does it feel like? There's nothing else like it. I've got all sorts of switches here. I've got, this is not silent, but way beyond in the back there, because I shoved everything out of the way for this for this interview, is a whole bunch of Holy Panda switches and stuff. They don't feel anything like this. This feels completely different. The tactility starts at like 0.01 millimeters. So the moment you press is when you feel that tactile bump, right? The very second that you press it, that's the tactile bump, if that explains it.
Yeah, so we talk about switches on this show a lot. And obviously there's no shortage of mechanical switchers. There's like a new one coming out or a new brand getting into them all the time, seemingly every day. I'm curious, why did you decide to make these? There are even, you know, switches that use magnets as well. You can get them in some pre-built keyboards. Not like yours, but, you know, SteelSeries uses magnets in its switches for the Apex Pro, which has customizable actuation. Wooting has one that's pressure sensitive, and they use magnets as well. So I'm just curious why you decided to make your own, and what are you trying to bring to the table that's different than what's already, you know, made by companies?
I brick keyboards. I used to go through like a new keyboard every 6 to 9 months because they just didn't last. Even if I got mechanical keyboards, they would break. I have a backup keyboard here, like in case I wreck the firmware, because sometimes I make a mistake in the firmware I type or whatever, and then it doesn't work. So I need something to get back and fix it. So I have this keyboard here. This keyboard has three keys that just don't work anymore. Fortunately, they're just like the arrow keys, and I think the delete key and the backspace key have issues. You know, they're a bit finicky because I have sausage fingers, and I hit keys really hard, and I break them, and I type a ton, and I wear them out, and I was sick of that. I was sick of having to buy a new keyboard all the time. So I said, you know what? I'm going to make a 3D printable switch that will last forever because I'm sick of everything breaking on me all the time. And if it does break, it won't matter because it's just like a penny in filament. And just I can have a dozen extras just hanging around, or I can print one on demand whenever I like, right? That's why I decided to make a 3D printable keyboard switch. And why did I use magnets? That's actually a little bit special. So when I first started, I just was going to make a regular switch with springs. But then I found out that trying to get custom springs made for your own little hobby project is like, it costs a fortune. You know, it's there's no way, right? And I tried to make them myself, but there's no way you're going to get the consistency with the tolerances and the strength. It's just impossible. You need special spring making machines to do that. So I just tried a bunch of different things. I tried, you know, soft filaments to try and make springs out of those, kind of like a rubber dome stuff. And then I ultimately settled on magnets, because that way they're configurable without having to change the actual magnet. You know, like with a spring, if you want more force, you got to buy a different spring. But with a magnet, you can change how strong it is just by changing the tiny amount of plastic that goes above it. And that's why I chose magnets as the option. And the sensing mechanism is a little different than the switch itself, right? So the sensing mechanism is a Hall effect sensor or read switch, doesn't matter. As long as the magnet gets close, it'll work. And the Wooting 2, the Lecker edition that you were talking about, that one it has a magnet in the stem, and that magnet is used for detection only. Everything else is just a traditional switch on the inside. Mine's the only one that actually uses magnets as the mechanism for tactility and the motion of the switch.
Very cool. So I know, Avram, you had your eyes on those keycaps there as well. You made those, right, Dan?
Yes, I did. Well, why 3D print a keyboard if you're not going to 3D print everything, right? I 3D printed the keycaps. I 3D printed this little case here. Everything you see here is 3D printed except for this like wrist rest, which I'm working on making a special something like this, and the mouse.
So what did you use to 3D print cookie holder, that?
That's 3D printed.
Ooh.
What did I use to 3D print the keycaps? Well, I wrote a OpenSCAD program called Keycap Playground, and it's on GitHub. If you just search for Keycap Playground in Google, it'll come up. And it lets you design your own keycaps. It lets you design all sorts of crazy things, too. Like, I've got this twist design, right? And that's just another, just me fooling. That's why I call it the keycap playground, because you can play, right? Something like this is hard to print because you have to print it flat like this and then sand the crap out of it to make it smooth.
Oh, I hate sanding.
Yeah, I don't like that either. So what I normally do is I just print the keycap like this, and I'll just print it on its side like that. That way, when the printer is laying down the layer lines, right, and I pull it off the printer, the layer lines run like this, right? So I pull it off the printer, and now I put it on my keyboard. The layer lines are running up and down to my fingers, and it feels smooth right off the printer. This keycap I'm holding here had no post-processing at all. It's just exactly as it printed. And if I turn the brightness, you can see the legend. But.
Wow. So I'm really curious, because I tried to print a 3D print, as we talked a little before the show aired. I tried 3D printing some SA keycaps I found on Thingiverse, because I really want to try some SA keycaps. And the cap itself looked okay, but the, I don't know what you call it, the part inside that actually connects to the switch.
The stem
was all messed up and could no way lock onto a Cherry MX or compatible switch. How is that an issue of my printer's not good enough? Or I mean, I wasn't printing on its side.
It probably was because you weren't printing it on its side. So the tolerances for a keycap's stem, like the part that goes in the switch here, I think I've got here we go. So this is a Kale box white. See how it's got like that perimeter around it?
Yeah.
So that's basically your tolerance perimeter. That's how much plastic. So think of the empty space here. You need to fill that with the keycap, right?
Right.
And your 3D printer's, 0.4 millimeter nozzle, that's going to be tough. Right, if it's printing just flat like this, because it has a 0.4, 0.45 or 0.42 millimeter width, well, standard, you make it smaller, but so it's not going to print very well because there's just not that much space in there to fill that in. But if you print it on its side, now you've got the tolerances of your layer height to take instead of the flat tolerance, like right. The layer width. Now you can use the layer height to control how tight this is. And it ends up being much more precise, and it will come out way better. It'll fit right on your keycap, right off the printer. I mean, right on your switch.
Will I need supports?
It depends on the angle. So if I'm printing my keycap like this, yeah, you're going to need supports because you're printing over midair. But if you print it at just a little bit of an angle, and then you set the layer height to something like 0.12 or 0.16, then it can layer on top of each other, and you're not going to have enough droop for it to matter. So you don't really need my keycap playground has a built-in support mechanism that it adds automatically. But lately I've been turning it off because that's about the angle that I print them at. If you're looking at it right here, I want to say it's
does
like,
it angle it for you?
By default, if you just open up the keycap playground and hit F5 to render, to do the preview, you'll see a keycap that's tilted like this. It's just about like that.
Ooh, I got to try.
And it's got the support built in too.
I think I might try that today.
Abram has a new project for tonight. Yeah.
I gotta try that today. Do you think it'll work on? So my 3D printer here, which by the way we like a lot, so this is good for our audience to know, is a FlashForge Adventure 3, or Adventure 3 Lite to be precise. Do you think that could handle it?
Yep, no problem. And you can do as many legends or whatever legends you want to. So I fooled around with this one. I don't know if you can see it, but. Maybe if I crank up the
how do you print with legends? Like how does that, because usually you're talking about a monochrome thing when you 3D print.
Right. Maybe if I get a little bit of a light here. Oh, that's too bright. Oh, maybe a little bit. See how there's like a dual legend there? You can see the F2. So my keycap playground lets you put the legends wherever you want, whatever font you want as well. All around the keycap, as many as you want, and it's fun to play around with, to be honest. I'm always printing keycaps. I print new keycaps like probably every week.
That is
just because I love screwing around with them.
I didn't think I could do it. Oh wow.
And it does long keycaps too. Like this is a caps lock key.
Oh,
Very nice. I think I may print them with this filament. So I have this like rainbow filament that I've been using lately.
You know what? That's make a terrible keycap.
Oh, okay.
I've tried the rainbow filament.
It's too glossy.
It's like it. So these are silk PLA. It's that CC3D gold stuff, right?
Yeah.
The problem with them is it's too soft, right? It's kind of like squishy a little bit. So I was able to pull it right off the stem. It's just barely hanging on there. And I toned the tolerances down to like zero on these. And the problem is the more you press them, it's just that filament gets looser and looser over time.
Okay.
So it looks gorgeous. I will say it'll look so cool. You'll be so proud of yourself with your rainbow keycaps, especially if you print one at a time, to work your way through the filament.
Right.
But they don't work out that well. What I did with these, this is my numpad that I made. It's the same mechanism, same void switches. And what I did with this one is I just used some silicone caulk to hold them there because I knew that over time they would get looser and looser because it's the silk filament, both of them.
How did you get the collar on the legends? Do you have a
multi-material printer? I've got the Prusa MMU2, so I can do up to five filaments at once. But let me tell you, it takes forever. These are 0.2. This was done with a 0.25 millimeter nozzle, and with multi-material, I want to say all of these keycaps probably took 36 hours to print.
Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah,
that is rough,
but they look gorgeous, right? I mean, come on.
Yeah, absolutely.
They do look fantastic. That's why you need to have many 3D printers.
Yes, 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 exactly. I need to talk to my wife
because each one is so slow. You have to kind of
have them all running.
You have to be like multi-core.
Especially Abram, I know you love keyboards with the most. The more keys, the better. So you're gonna have a lot of keycaps.
Yeah,
you're gonna want to print.
No question about it. No question. I wanna do what I can. I'm the opposite of that. I would make the opposite of that keyboard if I could. I would not only have a numpad, I would have 24 function keys. I would make a terminal keyboard.
That's where I started as well. When I started this project, I was like, I'm going to make a full size 104 key. In fact, screw that. I'm going to make like a 130 key keyboard because why not? Right. I'm making it myself. And I love a nice big keyboard and I'll put a huge screen on there. But then I realized how much it costs if you have a PCB that's bigger than like 300 millimeters.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
So yeah, go ahead, go nuts, but divide it into multiple PCBs and deal with the problems that that entails. I actually am trying to solve that problem myself here with this the analog keyboard unit PCB that I've been working on. So it actually comes in a board bigger than this, but I used these to make my to make this thing over here, my little macro pad. So that's why it's all broken up. But normally it's 5x5 grid. So the way this thing works is it lets you build out your keyboard however you like. You can cut them up, and I made a parametric little SCAD generator that generates little holders for them. This was an earlier clip-in prototype, and it's held so strongly I don't want to bother taking it out. This one was, the tolerance was a little too tight. But yeah, you should be able to snap fit this into whatever you want. So you give the SCAD the, you know, rows and columns you want, and it will generate a little plate just like that that'll hold it in place. And the new version actually has holes for the wires and things like that too. So the plan is you'll be able to hand wire, sort of hand wire your own keyboard. I mean, it comes with the Hall effect sensors and the LED built right in. But then you can make your giant 133 key whatever using something like this without having to design your own PCB. You just need a microcontroller and a multiplexer board, which I also made. I actually have it behind me, but they're way back there.
See that, well, like, we won't make you roll.
Yeah.
Roll all the way back there. Well, but
the headphones that don't go that far.
Yeah, it'll get a little messy.
With those two things and a microcontroller that has plenty of analog inputs, you should be able to make a keyboard with as many as you want. Every multiplexer adds 16 inputs. So if you've got like one analog pin, that can be 16 keys, right? So for every analog pin in your microcontroller, you can add 16 keys. And that's how big you can make it with something like this. And I do plan to make something like that for reference. I have a special request from a special YouTuber to do that. And maybe I'll do that. We'll see.
Awesome. Well, Riskable is going to be hanging out with us for the rest of the show. So if you have anything you want to ask him, now is definitely the time. He's giving out all the good tips right now. So definitely drop in your questions. And speaking of tips, like I said, we have our editor-in-chief here today. Abram is a wealth of knowledge, and I think he has actually a very relevant tip to share with us. What do you got for us, Abram?
So speaking of numpads, I realize that a lot of people in the industry don't, a lot of people who are keyboard enthusiasts don't like them. And maybe the reason why is they don't, they're not accountants. So they don't have a lot of reasons to actually type in numbers that they just could use the top row. But what if you could take your numpad and turn it into something else? So I wanted to show, I recently wrote an article for Tom's Hardware about how to do this. How you could turn your numpad into something else. So here I have a program, freeware program called SharpKeys. And what SharpKeys does is it allows you to remap, this is for Windows, freeware program, any key on your keyboard to any other key, and it breaks out the numpad keys. So what I've done here, and it may be a little hard to see, is I've remapped some of my numpad keys to be media player keys because my keyboard doesn't have media keys. So the way you do that kind of thing is you hit add here at the bottom, and then you go through and you find the key you want, or you can just hit type key. So like, let's say I want to assign key, you know, let's say I want to hit the num1 key and I want to assign it to actually be another key, like, you know, media mute. Maybe I want that to be my mute button now because I don't have a mute button on my keyboard. I want that to be one. So that's assigned. And when I'm done, I hit write to registry. It'll write all these changes. And then next time I log in and out or reboot, that's it. And I don't need to keep running SharpKeys because it's written something to the registry. So that is the whole story. It will remap them. Now, that's great. It lets you turn your numpad into something else. But the something else has to be a map to keys that actually exist in the world, like media keys. Maybe your computer doesn't have them, but you can map to. On the other hand, what if you want your keys to do something completely different, like a series of things? Well, then you might want to use AutoHotkey, which is a macro language that is freeware macro. You search for AutoHotkey, and you create a text file I'm editing this in the SITE4 auto hotkey IDE because it auto completes stuff, but you could use any text editor, and you create a .ahk file. You put some things up at the top of it that are pretty standard, and then for each key that you want to do something, you put the key name, colon, colon, what you want the key to do, and then return. So, for example, the numpad home key, I want it to run a program. I want it to run Notepad. So I've just made it written here, run Notepad. Now, if it doesn't immediately recognize the program name, you can put the full path to the executable, to the exe. And then you'll see that if I have this running, I can hit the numpad home key, and it will, is it running? It's not running at this moment. But anyway, you can hit the numpad home key and it will launch Notepad. Similarly, let's say I want it to type something for me. I want it to type my address, for example. I can assign that to the numpad up key, otherwise known as 8. And any program I'm in, no matter what I'm in, it'll type this. And this little accent N is actually a return, so it'll do that in order. Finally, and this might be the coolest thing that you can do. Let me see if I can actually make it work. I think I have to close some other stuff to make it work. Is you can program it to make menus, to do things with menus. So let's say I'm in Notepad here, right? And hopefully this works. Let's see. So I assigned this to page up, which is the 9 key. Okay. For some reason, only because I'm doing this right now on this demo, is it not doing it. But what it does is it will go in and it will hit a series of keys for you to do something from a menu. So in this case, let's say I want to turn the status bar on and off, this little bar at the bottom of Notepad. What it's actually doing is, you know, Windows has short keyboard shortcuts for things. So if you hit Alt V and there's a menu at top, it goes to it. And if you hit down once and hit Enter, that's the equivalent of using your mouse for that, right? So I have configured this so that if I hit Numpad page up, it will just do that for me. And it does it so fast that you can't even see it happening. So the point is, that's going to save me a mouse movement or a whole lot of keystrokes. And what I have here is you can also set it by the program. So here, it's only going to actually follow that command if I'm in the Notepad window. It's not going to do it if I'm in the window for another program. So that's just, like, there's a lot more that you can do with AutoHotkey. And we have a tutorial about how to do this. And of course, there's a whole ecosystem of community around AutoHotkey. But if you think about it, it turns your numpad from a boring set of numbers that you don't use, or arrow keys that replicate the arrow keys you already have, into a macro pad that you can use for pretty much anything you want to do.
Great. And I just shared a link to your tutorial, Abram, in the chat. So if you want to take a look at that on your own time, definitely check out that tutorial. And if you have any questions, I'm sure Abram will be glad to answer them. So just drop them into the chat right now. So in the meantime, you know, on this show, I always love to give you all a preview of what we're testing here at Tom's Hardware. So let's do a quick session of what's in the lab. Yep. So for today's live stream, I've actually been using a different microphone than I normally use. I've been using the Rocket Torch. So let me show it to you guys real quick. All right, so here we go. This is the Rocket Torch right here. So a couple specs. This is a dual condenser capsule mic with 24-bit audio with up to a 48 kilohertz sampling rate. And this is Rocket's first gaming microphone. It's going for $100 right now in the US. So here, let's play with it a little bit. So as you can see, you get this bass here. You don't have to use it. You can opt for a boom arm if you want, but you do get some handy tools here. So first we could start with the gain. This is what's controlling the volume of my voice. And you could see there's some RGB here, and there'll be less RGB as I turn the volume down, which I'm doing now. So I'm turning the volume up now, and my voice should be getting louder. The RGB is going up, and then as I bring it down, my volume decreases. The RGB goes down as well. So that's just like a little visual cue to let you know where your volumes are at. You can look here. It's also just so we can say it's an RGB mic, I suspect. So what else do we have? We have our volume here, a little volume knob. This controls what I hear, as if you plug in headphones in the back, and I can mute it. There'll be a little icon there. But what if I wanted to mute my own voice? There's actually a sensor up here, and when I swipe above it, my voice will be muted, and you'll know because there'll be the mute icon here. So let's give it a shot. There we go. So that worked pretty easily. And then finally, what we have here is a knob to alter the different pickup patterns of the mic. So I've been using this one all the way to the left this whole show. This is a cardioid pickup, which is supposed to capture voices directly in front of the mic. But I'm going to switch over to stereo. And this is for capturing multiple sources. Maybe if I had multiple people here or some instruments that I was recording, that's what it's meant to be for. I don't know if you can actually hear a difference, but I'm going to also bring it over now to the third mode. This is called the whisper mode, Rocket's term for it. And Rocket says this is actually for if you're recording late at night and we're like speaking quietly, this would be the best mode to use. So if I were to whisper, if I was to speak really quietly, this is allegedly the best mode, allegedly better than whispering in the stereo mode, which I'm in now, or whispering in the cardio mode, which I have just switched to. So I'm curious, did you guys actually hear any difference in those pickup patterns?
A little bit.
Not much. It was pretty similar. Much.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. I do have one more question I do want to ask you guys, because like I said, this isn't the mic I typically use for the show. I normally use this right here. This is a Razer Siren X. Now, mind you, the Razer is about $75, $80, whereas the Rocket is $100. So there is a price difference there. But because I have two mics and I've got you two here and our viewers, I would love some help in determining which mic sounds better for the show. So this is a Rocket Torch. I've been using it the whole show. I'm going to actually get, you know, properly equidistant from both mics so we can be fair. And then I'm going to switch over to the Siren X. So I guess I need a phrase that I could say into both mics so it's, you know, comparable. Riskable, you're our special guest. What's a phrase I can use to test?
Let's do a full alphabet, you know, something you type like a wizard's job is to vex chumps quickly in a fog.
I don't know if I can remember all that.
The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog.
Okay, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. So there we go, the Rocket Torch. The quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. So now we're going to switch to the Siren X. Hopefully this works. Okay, can you all hear me?
Yep.
So I've switched over to the Siren X, and again, the quick brown fox jumps over the lazy dog. So
the Rocket sounds better.
Yeah, definitely.
The Rocket sounds a lot better.
Yeah, it does. This one sounds like it's a little too compressed. Kind of like if you forgot to lift the plastic off of a microphone or something, like something's covering it up.
Yeah, you can really tell a difference. There's definitely a huge difference.
But this one might have been the gain is too low, and it's doing a little too good a job removing background noise.
So with both of these mics, they are plug and play, so there's no software. So I can control that with the Siren X. As you saw with the Torch, there was the dial. The gain dial that I demoed. This is what you're gonna get with the Siren X. You know, I could obviously come closer and things like that, but this is what you get. So yeah, I guess I'll be rocking the Rocket Torch for my next episode.
The Rocket Torch is better. It sounds fuller. It sounds like there's something missing with the Siren.
Right. All right. So we will be testing the Rocket Torch over the coming days, so stay tuned to the site to see our full review. But in the meantime, I just want to thank everyone who's come to the show. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, anywhere you see Tom's Hardware. Put your virtual thumb on it. Make us happy. And you'll make sure you catch every episode of the Tom's Hardware Show and also the Raspberry Pi themed podcast, which Avram over here hosts on Tuesdays. And Riskable, thank you so much. We've had so much fun and we've learned a lot. I know Avram's going to be busy for the next like week because of what you told him. But is there anything else you want to say to the viewers? And can you also tell them where they can go to stay caught up with all the cool stuff you do?
Well, I'm always posting stuff to my YouTube channel, but it's like an uncut channel. I don't really edit much. I also tend to post to the Mechanical Keyboard subreddit and the 3D printing subreddit. So keep your eye out there for my posts. I'm hoping to make, you know, the PCBs and everything, all the files, you know, publicly available soon. We'll see. We'll see. It takes a while to get everything ready for public consumption.
Okay.
I put in the chat his, the GitHub for your keycap playground.
And soon the void switches will be there too. So if you look at my GitHub profile, keep an eye out on the repos. I'll be posting the void switch, stuff soon too.
Awesome. A lot of things to be excited about. Well, Riskable, thank you again for stopping by. Avram, I'll see you as always at work.
Yeah.
That is our show. We'll see you all next Thursday.
See ya.